Joshua 24:2 says that Abram's own family worshiped other gods. How is that reflected in the stories about Abraham that we find in the book of Genesis? Welcome to Probe. We continue our series, Beginnings and Belongings, Conversations in the Book of Genesis. My dialogue partners are Paul Dibdahl, Larry Vavirka from the School of Theology at Walla Walla College. I'd like to put that question in your laps, men. What marks do we find in the story of Abraham that he may have fallen far away from God's ideal?
Well, I think there are a fair number of indications in the story that he was far from ideal. He was not always someone who told the truth. That's repeated several times. And there was a couple others that I was going to move to, and now they've just slipped my mind.
Well, the way I usually put the question to my students is, what kinds of things in the story of Abraham would you indicate that would disqualify him from serving as an elder in your local church?
The Hagar incident.
Hagar incident.
Offering, hearing a voice which tells him to kill his son, which he seems willing to do.
Mm-hmm. Telling lies about his wife.
Telling lies about his wife. Those would be some of the things that would come to mind.
And at perhaps a less serious one, maybe an elder could get away with this. When God tells him that he's going to have a son, Abraham laughs.
Yeah.
That's fairly flippant behavior in the presence of the Most High.
He wasn't a vegetarian. I mean, for some that might be an issue.
So it's quite clear that you have the sequence of events, as we've referred to a couple of times in our conversations, the sequence of events in Genesis 3 to 11 are really quite significant for leading up to Abraham's life. I've often described this in terms of the avalanche when you get down here, as if God was saying, we're going to let sin develop. What happens when you turn the devil loose? Well, it's pretty catastrophic. And then he comes to Abraham and says, now, Abraham, you and I will be partners, and we will show how you can be a blessing to the world. But that has to take place very gently, step by step, without going too fast. Mm-hmm. Now, let's take the first incident, which is just an astonishing one. Abraham takes his wife, Sarah, down to Egypt, and what happens there with brother Pharaoh? Put some arms and legs on that story, and let's tell it so that our listeners can remember it.
Well, Sarah's very beautiful.
Okay.
And Abram is afraid that Pharaoh will simply use his prerogative as ruler and take her as his wife after killing him, getting rid of him, if he's seen as the husband. So he presents the relationship not as a married relationship, but as that they're siblings. That's what he tells Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm. Well, he gets a little mileage out of her beauty. I mean, because of her, the king treated him well. He gives him flocks of sheep and goats and cattle and donkeys and slaves and cattle. He does all right.
So, what does God do to put things right?
Well, the Lord inflicted, this is verse 17 of Genesis 12, inflicted serious diseases on Abram. No, but that's the surprising part, at least to me. Instead of punishing Abram, he instead inflicts serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household because of Abram's wife, and because of Abram as well. So, Abram lies and Pharaoh is punished.
How does the king find out that it's his wife? I mean, he sends for him and asks him, "Why? What have you done to me? Why didn't you tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she was your sister?"
Clearly, there was some kind of insight, whether from his seers or from Abraham. He gets the message.
He figures out what went wrong.
Here's your wife. Take her and get out.
But it's it's not the kind of violent reaction that one might expect.
Mm-hmm.
He still treats him with great respect.
Mm-hmm.
Go, take your wife, be gone.
And everything he had, yeah. He's able to keep those things which he's acquired there in Egypt.
Now, that's not going to encourage Abraham to be a man of veracity and truth in the future, is it?
And sure enough, he does it once again.
Yes.
If we read the stories on, he gets in the same kind of difficulty. So how do we evaluate that from a moral perspective? If we see the truth as it is in Jesus, and then we go back to the story of Abraham.
It seems almost like a broken record to just keep mentioning this, but we need to keep mentioning this, I think. We idealize these heroes of faith, and certainly they were heroes of faith, but these are imperfect people. People with all kinds of problems, and I think misconceptions about God and who he was, and just lack of knowledge as well.
Mm-hmm.
And God meets them where they are, and he takes them kind of one step at a time. He's patient with them. He blesses them even when sometimes it doesn't seem that they deserve it. So I think just in story after story, we find the quote-unquote Old Testament God of wrath and rage and all that. If we would actually read through the Old Testament, I think bit by bit we would see another side that's quite clearly presented, but that we often miss in the stories.
And sometimes it's the purpose of the author to emphasize one side. I think of Hebrews 11. If you want to read the scary parts of the Old Testament, you won't find it in Hebrews 11. You will find it, I mean, if Sarah laughs, as she does when she's going to have a child, you'll read about that in Genesis, but not in Hebrews 11. See? So the author's purpose may tell part of it, but I think it's simply marvelous to see how God worked with these people and put up with all kinds of monkey business, but still they were his children, and Abraham was still called of God. Now let's look at a story which may be a bit more positive as far as Abraham is concerned. The story of generous Abram and greedy Lot. There's not enough room. The two families quarrel. And what does Abraham do as far as his nephew is concerned?
Gives him first choice.
And? Lot shows deference to his elders?
No, he looked over the land. Picked the part that looked the most fertile, productive, the best place to live, had the most water, and so on.
Do you find yourselves admiring Abram for doing that?
Yeah, I do. Sure.
That's the kind of generosity I would like to be able to show. I don't know the extent to which I'm able to do it, but I do admire Abram for doing that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in pointing out the problems in Abraham, that doesn't change the fact that there are some great qualities that we see as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be an example where we see one of those positive qualities.
Now, there's a continuing interest in Abram's part with Lot and company. There is a battle recorded in Genesis 14 where a coalition of kings come. Wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah, take the people. And what does Abraham do here to rescue his nephew and to put things right?
He goes to war, resorts to violence.
Not much of a pacifist, in other words.
Apparently not, no.
Doesn't give us a body count. You'll have to go elsewhere in the Old Testament for that. But it's clear, he takes his armed men and goes. But then there's another amazing stroke of generosity in Abram's part when they bring people back. What does he do?
Are you thinking of his interaction with Melchizedek? Or?
Melchizedek and his partners, his colleagues. Abraham himself won't take any of the spoil.
Mm-hmm.
But he says to his partners in war, let them have their share. I won't take any, but let them have their share.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an amazing man of integrity, moral worth here, that we could wish had been practiced consistently by Abraham, but certainly in this area, it's a great gift.
Yeah.
Now, there's one other religious factor that's very significant here is Melchizedek. Mm-hmm. Because Abraham pays tithes to Melchizedek, and who in the world is Melchizedek? Does Genesis 14 give us any clue there?
Well, he's king of Salem, and my understanding is that Salem, there is another reference to, what, Jerusalem, or at least that, mm-hmm. that locale. So he's described as king and also priest of God Most High. And that's interesting to me because, again, my understanding is that the phrase there, God Most High, El Elyon, was a reference to the Canaanite high god, the highest deity in the Canaanite pantheon. Mm-hmm. And it is to this man, who is priest of El Elyon, that Abram pays a tithe to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also interesting, the connection, Melchizedek describes El Elyon as creator of heaven and earth. And Abram's response is he applies that same title, the title of the Canaanite high god, El Elyon, and equates El Elyon with Yahweh, creator of heaven and earth. So there are all kinds of, for me, with my interest in missiology and other world religions and so forth, this is a fascinating interaction between Abram and Melchizedek.
Do you see Abraham then reframing Melchizedek's concept of God and adding a dimension to it then, or another identity?
I don't know about adding dimensions. I don't know. Not so much in the story that I see. He simply, it seems to me, he assumes.
Well, it's not like Paul on Mars Hill.
I think it's something similar to that, but without the same level of development here in Genesis.
Mm.
There is someone, apparently, at least the way it seems to me, Melchizedek is presented as a follower of El Elyon, who is, from Abram's perspective, another way of referring to Yahweh. At least Abram uses uh-huh. that same title. Uh-huh. Now, that creates questions, but also opens some fascinating possibilities to me.
Well, it's very interesting to see how the Old Testament deals with issues like this. But there's a much broader perspective in the Old Testament than we often give credit for.
Yeah.
The gods are alive and well there. Now, we won't get into that very much in Genesis, but it's clearly an Old Testament principle.
Yeah. God has been working not just with Abram, but I think God was working in other places, in Canaan as well.
Yeah.
And I think this story is an evidence of that.
Yeah. And Melchizedek means my king is
righteousness. Yeah.
And Tzedek is one of the great things that you can say about the God of the Old Testament, about Yahweh. Well, now, next week we're going to get into the next section in Abraham's story, and it's full of really challenging stuff. Ishmael, the promise, the conversation over Sodom, and Lot's escape. So we'll take those next week, and my conversation partners will again be Paul and Larry. My thanks to Susan Michael, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.